Kevin Durant goes off. Kristaps Porzingis goes off. Joel Embiid sends the Hawks off the floor. Carl Anthony Towns has to go off the floor. Plus, I got a question. Why can no one in the NBA get a friggin' stop? This is Locked On NBA.
You are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily source of all things NBA from the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thanks for making this your first listen. We appreciate you guys joining us on all platforms from Spotify to Apple Podcasts to YouTube, all across the interwebs. You can find our show. Thanks for joining us on a Tuesday. My name is Matt Moore. I'm the senior NBA writer for the Action Network, joined by David Ramil. He's co-host of Locked On Heat. I'm co-host of Locked On Nuggets. Lots to get into for your Tuesday listening pleasure as we recap all the news from the association and the stories that you need to know from Monday in the NBA. David, we'll go ahead and we'll start as, look, I have ranted and I have raved. I have yelled and I have cajoled. I have blistered and I have screamed about how much the Nets are a joke of a franchise and how much they have been a disappointment since the arrival of their two superstars. But David, over the last 2 weeks, I regret to inform you, I think the Nets might be good.
Back at 500 tonight, after a slow start against the Orlando Magic, they rallied to win by 7, and a lot of that due to Kevin Durant playing incredible. I think we're so tired of all the different issues affecting the Brooklyn Nets and anybody who follows them regularly that we're kind of overlooking just how good a basketball player he is, because he's pretty damn good. And on a night like tonight, it just kind of reminds us that he might actually be the best player in the NBA. We kind of just tend to overlook that because there's just, well, he's not exactly a generally beloved figure in today's league. And there's a lot of that going on around his team in particular. But yeah, you know what? They're still pretty good. And back at 500, and a lot of that due to the fact that he is one of the top five players in the NBA.
I think from 2000, you can argue when it started. I would say 2008. If you are a fan of certain teams, you may go later, but roughly between 2008 to 2011, somewhere in there, from that point, from that range up until basically, I don't know, 2 years ago, probably when they won the title, LeBron James was like the best player in the world. Like, he was certifiably the best player in the world.
Right.
And now what we have, I think, is we have a rotating cast of guys that on any given night, you're going to watch them and go, man, that's the best guy in the world. Like, watch Giannis destroy the Cavs last week and was like, that's the best player in the world. You watch Nikola Jokic absolutely dissect a defense and you're like, man, he's so impactful. Like, that might be the best player in the world. Steph goes for 47. That's the best player in the world. But when KD has these nights, 45 points on 19 of 24, 3 of 5 from 3, only took 4 free throws, 7 boards, 5 assists, 2 steals, 2 blocks, did have 6 turnovers, plus 11 in a win, it does remind you what they can do. And the comments will be about, yeah, but it was the Magic. I'm telling you, like, this is what the Nets need, though. Like, they're not going to be a team. They can beat anybody, I think, on any given night with their talent, but they can lose on a lot of nights given their structure and given how the team is kind of built. KD's combination, I saw him in Texas at Texas when he was there for his freshman year, and I walked out being like, that's a Hall of Famer. And since then, every single night has basically been like, yes, like, that guy is just absolutely incredible. It is a shame to me that I don't blame, like, the narrative. It's not like, oh, people unfairly, like, no, like, he made decisions and people have formed opinions because of decisions he made. But it's a shame to me that a player as unbelievably talented, and also I want to make this very clear, who gives as much to the game as KD does, because there are a lot of talented guys that did not put in the work and that don't love basketball the way that Kevin Durant loves basketball. The narratives around the court and his legacy and the teams and the free agency and all that and the Kyrie stuff, blah, blah, blah. That's part of the story. But the basketball side of it, David, is so pure and so amazing when it comes to Kevin Durant.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't even, but the legacy ties into it too, though, right? Like, I'm trying to think 15, 20 years from now, what are we going to say about Kevin Durant? Like, really great player, but I didn't really know him all that well. And he kind of just wanted it that way. But yeah, to your point, like, you talk about what he could do on the court, and it's like, even if you go into the future and start talking about him in hindsight, what a smooth player, what a great scorer and an underrated defender, and just, again, one of the best players in the league, but it never ever felt that way. I mean, I know there was the constant back and forth between him and LeBron, right? That he was sick of being number two to LeBron's number one. And then, you know, the evolution of him eventually winning the MVP trophy and then going to Golden State. And then that sort of changed a little bit, because while he was that team's best player, it didn't feel that way, because that's always going to be Steph Curry's team. And so now it's just so hard to get, like, I don't even know where I'll remember him. I mean, even in these last few years in Brooklyn, battling through injury, coming back, that's a great story. And yet they haven't won enough to make it stick, right? You can't talk about it fondly and say, well, he was able to carry a team to victory. And there's so much off the court drama between COVID, between Kyrie and vaccination, between James Harden getting there and saying, you know what, I don't actually want to be here. And KD kind of going, well, everybody's free to make their own decisions. And so it's just kind of hard to digest the entirety of what KD represents and separate that from how good he is as a player. But I'm glad that we're talking about it, because he absolutely deserves his flowers. Like, he is such a great player, and we don't appreciate him enough because of all the stuff off the court and that ties into it. And, you know, that's unfortunate, but yes, nights like tonight, we are reminded that he is a very, very good basketball player.
The precision of his technique, which allows him to get into position for such tough shots, his ability to just maintain balance and hit shots from any sort of balance position. I mean, he's just so incredibly skilled. He is just an amazing player. Equally amazing, Joel Embiid, who had an absolutely phenomenal MVP performance versus the Atlanta Hawks. The Sixers trailed for much of this game without James Harden and Tyrese Maxey. They did get 24 points from Tobias Harris, went for 10 of 18 and 10 boards. Harris was great in this game. So was Shake Milton, who gave them 21 points and 7 assists. Shake was great in this game. He had 21 points on 20 shots, but he hit some big, big ones. And especially the playmaking was what they needed in this game. But at the end of the game, Joel Embiid, down one, puts his shoulder into DeJounte Murray on a switch, gets just enough to move him off without drawing an offensive foul, goes to the fadeaway, doesn't lean too far back. It's a short fade versus some of those longer fades that Embiid takes. He drains it on the other end. He reads Trae Young's attempt at a lob pass, disrupts it, deflects it, secures it, and the Sixers get a big win versus the Atlanta Hawks. They go up 2-1 in the season series versus the Hawks. And you ask me, look, what does that mean? It means that they have secured that they cannot lose tiebreaker to Atlanta. Right. When you look at the playoff standings, look, it's entirely possible that Atlanta fades and isn't that good. That's entirely possible. But look, Atlanta's been pretty good this season, and they have a lot of trade chips to work with. So as long as there are injury issues with the Sixers, they're probably in the same range. And getting wins like this are a big differential. And every win they pick up without James Harden and Tyrese Maxey, that's a quality win, especially if it's versus a playoff team. Embiid was simply phenomenal tonight. This was an MVP-level performance from Embiid.
Yeah, 7 points in that last minute, and then the big defensive play that you mentioned. And that was maybe what startled me the most, was that defensive play, because he just covered an incredible amount of ground. And you kind of course, you know, he's so big, you expect him to be able to at least put a hand up and do something. But he dropped back in coverage. He anticipated what Trey was trying to do as far as throwing that lob into Collins, and he played it perfectly, was able to disrupt it just enough, and that was the game changer. From there, it was just a matter of him getting fouled and getting sent to the line, and that's what added to those 7 points. But just big shot after big shot late in the game. And look, I was a little concerned about seeing what version of him we'd see, because he was off for 4 games, and, you know, he's always going to get kind of rusty. As a player his size, it's bound to happen that he's not going to look particularly smooth out there. And then he struggles a little bit. The offense kind of sets, you know, kind of bogs down a little bit. It wasn't quite as smooth as it has been when they were winning 3 of the last 4 games without Embiid. And so you wonder, well, maybe he's not quite there yet. Maybe he rushed back too soon. And maybe the offense just tends to be a little bit better when he's, you know, not kind of dominating the ball as much, especially when there aren't other ball handlers score like Maxey and Harden out there. At the same time, you kind of remember again, he can dominate for a huge stretch or a small stretch that reminds you again that he is an MVP level player. And it's just, that was summing up the night perfectly there, is that he was okay for 47 minutes, but really, really, really damn good in that last minute. And that was all the difference for a big win for them.
The Hawks had the lead for most of this game.
Yeah.
And if you check the box score, you're going to notice that DeAndre Hunter was a plus four. John Collins was a plus six.
Yeah.
DeJounte Murray was actually only a minus two, despite the free throws at the end. So he basically played them to an even spot. There's Trae Young. It was a minus seven in this game. Okay, fine. Plus minus single game, whatever. All right. Young in this game was 6 of 14 from the field, 43%, and 1 of 4 from 3, 25%. On the season, Trae Young is now shooting 41% from the field and 31% from the 3. That was entering tonight, so it got just slightly below that after this game. What's going on with Trae Young? Like, where is Trae Young, like, the offensive engine? Where's a lot of this is Trae does so much, and he does playmake, and he's got a big toll on him. But if he's not going to be efficient, there's only so far that Atlanta can go. I've liked this team better when DeJounte Murray has been running the offense this season than I have when Trae Young has been. Mostly, I think, because Trae's been struggling to shoot from the field. I'm a little concerned here. We're 25% of the way through the season, and I'm still waiting for Trae Young, super shooter, to show up.
I don't know that it's going to happen either. I mean, you kind of expect a bounce back, right? Because he's been that good over the course of his career where you know that he's going to find his rhythm. But I wonder how much of, and maybe this is really reaching here, I wonder how much of last year's playoff performance against Miami, where they absolutely demolished him and made him look like a rather pedestrian player, how much that might have played into maybe impacting his confidence and things of that sort. I just don't have any other excuse for it. The shots were always there over the first few years of his career. They're still there now when he takes those 30-foot bombs. He's just not hitting them. And that's just always been a big aspect of his scoring ability, was being able to stretch the floor as wide out as he does and hitting a lot of those shots that were, you know, superhuman, Curry-esque, right? And he's just not doing that. The playmaking's still there, but even still, like, there's a lot of gambling there, a lot of passes that are necessary, behind-the-back passes that just, it seems like he's adding flourish for no reason whatsoever. And I know there's a big, he's a big component of their offense because of the playmaking ability, but he just seems like he's perhaps trying too hard. And unless he's masking some kind of injury or anybody, I don't think they've reported anything. I don't think we've heard anything about any kind of injury. He just doesn't seem quite like the player he was over the last couple all-star performances that he's had. You know, it's just a different version of him. I'm sure he'll bounce back, but we haven't seen it at any point this season, right?
Let's take a break. We're going to come back and we'll talk about Kristaps Porzingis' big night and an unfortunate injury for Karl-Anthony Towns, and the Mavericks make a roster move. We'll do all that when we come back on Locked On NBA. But first, I need to tell you about Turo. Turo is the world's largest car sharing marketplace. With Turo, you can book any car you want, wherever you want it, from a community of local hosts. You get to browse a huge selection of vehicles for just about any occasion or budget across the US, UK, Canada, and Australia. You can book a spacious SUV or a minivan for a family road trip. You get a classic or luxury car for a special event, a birthday, or a holiday. You can find affordable economy cars if you're on a budget and just need to get from A to B, or you can test drive that new electric vehicle you've had your eye on to see how it fits your everyday life. Many Turo hosts can even deliver the car right to you. Every trip is backed by liability insurance. Terms, conditions, and exclusions apply. Forget boring rental cars and find your drive at Turo.com. We'll be right back. Locked On NBA. Back here on Locked On NBA, thanks for joining us and making this part of your day. Matt Moore alongside David Ramil, glad to have you with us. Hope you guys are having a great week so far. Want to let you know that we thank you for making us your first listen every day. Your second listen should be Locked On Sports Today. All the best stories in sports, all the best things that you can find across the Locked On family of hosts, brought to you in the biggest stories. Check it out, Locked On Sports Today. All right, David, so we've got one more big performance to talk about in the association as we wrap up the action on Monday night. Do want to note that as we're recording this, Devin Booker is putting the finishing touches on a 44.8 rebound, 4-assist performance versus the Sacramento Kings. Another big win for the Suns without Chris Paul. Devin Booker joins the 40-point club. Another member of that on Monday night was Kristaps Porzingis, 41 points for KP as the Wizards put up 142 on the Minnesota Timberwolves. Porzingis was just on fire in this game. 12 of 18 from the field, 6 of 10 from 3 for Porzingis. That is absolutely ridiculous. 41 points, only 4 boards, only 3 assists, but who needs it when you're scoring that much? He scored 41 points in 31 minutes of this contest. KP has looked good in Washington. He looked good after the trade last year. When he's on the court, Kristaps Porzingis is a very good player, I think, especially next to Bradley Beal and some of the playmakers that Washington has. He looks a lot more comfortable than he did in Dallas. He's just got to stay on the court. But this is another example of how these guys that you will see kind of go through it and have these injuries and take time and, you know, look inconsistent, they still have these types of scoring performances if they have the talent, which KP definitely does.
Yeah, a career high for him, which was a little surprising because I felt like there was probably bigger games during his tenure in New York in particular when he was playing at a near all-star level, but I guess not. Just a big game for him. You knew it was going to be a bad matchup for Minnesota, right? With Rudy Gobert, he's not going to be able to keep up with KB along the perimeter. That kind of takes him out of the game completely. Karl-Anthony Towns not really matching up with him defensively either, so... you knew he was going to be able to get his shots. Well, I mean, because he's 7'4", and that's just something that he's always been able to do over the course of career, especially when he's healthy. But just a really dominating performance. I saw him in back-to-back games in Miami. Looked really, really good against Miami's smaller lineups. You expect that to be the case, but even again, against a bigger lineup, that plays to his strengths. Just a really, really solid showing from him. And again, yeah, a good point that he's fitting into Washington's system. They've got the talent around him. It's a well-balanced team. They started off well, 11-10 on the season, so they haven't been great. They haven't been able to push themselves, mostly because they just lost twice in a row to Miami. At the same time, they could be a play-in team, and that's a bounce back for them. It's probably an underwhelming season maybe for a lot of Wizards fans, but at least it's some kind of progress. I'm not sure that there's a clear identity on that team other than, you know, it's Bradley Beal's team, and that's the way it's going to be. Until eventually he exercises that option on his contract to seek out a trade somewhere. But for now, it's a good team, a potent team offensively, and they certainly looked at putting up 142 points against what was supposed to be a really, really good defensive group in Minnesota.
Yeah, we'll get more into the scoring explosion that we're seeing across the league in the final segment. The other big news from this, however, was unfortunate. Karl-Anthony Towns suffered a leg injury and had to leave the game, and initially it looked very much like an Achilles. Thankfully, the Minnesota Timberwolves announced that he has a calf strain and will be reevaluated later. Typically speaking, if there's an Achilles injury, they will say, like, has suffered an Achilles injury or lower or upper ankle. It doesn't typically tend to be calf. It's very rare that you see them list it as a calf strain and then come back later and say, actually, he tore the Achilles. So Thankfully, it sounds like he avoided that, which, thank goodness, because that would have been awful. It does mean, however, if it's a severe strain in his calf, it means the Towns could miss some time. The Wolves get blown out in this game. They've looked lost. They've looked like they don't have an identity. They look like they don't want to play this new approach with Gobert playing big. They look like nobody's comfortable. They can't get stopped. Their offense isn't necessarily prolific. If Towns has to miss significant time, is this going to be what we look back on as that's when the Wolves 2022-23 ill-fated season really came to an end, do you think?
Yeah, who fills in for what Towns has been able to provide them offensively? Like, he's such a great, again, underrated player that we've kind of overlooked because he just hasn't won a lot, and, you know, he's had so many personal issues off the court. Indicative of like bad character issues or anything like that, but just so many
tragedy
that he's tragic. Yeah, exactly. I was never high on the Rudy Gobert trade. I just never quite saw the fit, and I'm sorry to see it play out as badly as it has. Like, I think this was even lower expectations than I had for them too. So it's been worst case scenario. And this, if he does miss a significant amount of time, I think, again, a calf strain, it could be a grade 3 calf strain, if I'm not mistaken. And that could lead to an injury that sidelines him for months. Yeah. And if that's the case, I mean, they'll carry him through post the All-Star break. That could be brutal. Like, there's no coming back from that. And again, they're not making up for that level of production. There's nobody on that roster who fills in and adds the 25 points that Towns was providing. So, I mean, maybe they'll get some kind of sense of stability because now we know exactly that Gobert is going to be the anchor of that group. Defensively, it's no Twin Towers. We're not giving up the porous defense that Towns occasionally does or regularly does. So maybe they'll have some stability. Maybe there'll be a slight bounce back there in terms of, you know, we lost this player. Now we kind of have everybody try to find a different role, figuring it out. We've seen this in the past. A major player goes down. Look, we saw it play out in Philadelphia, right? They lost their top three players, and somehow they found a way to win games, albeit against, you know, mediocre-level teams. Maybe Minnesota catches a break, but over the long term, if he does wind up missing a significant amount of time, I just don't see them being able to sustain great victories or anything like that. So, yes, I can't help but think that it's going to be the end of their season because I just don't see them being able to bounce back. Hopefully, he does come back sooner than expected. Maybe he just misses a week or two, and somehow they'll still be able to find some sort of an identity or some sort of defensive stability in his absence, and maybe that'll translate once he does return to the court.
Yeah, I had decided before this game that I was like, I'm not going to judge the Wolves until the end of January because everyone's just like pouring dirt on them. Like everyone's just been like, there's a tweet going around last night of a bad sequence, and it was like the Wolves got fleeced and all these type of things. I'm just like, okay. In my opinion, this was enough of a change, and it was so. The bigger problem is not just the change that they underwent; it's that there was resistance to that change. Like the guys did not like take leadership and be like, "We really got to like embrace this, and like this is who we got, and these are our guys." Like Anthony Edwards is basically like, "Well, I guess I don't get it, but okay." And like the rest of the team very much seems to kind of follow that fit of like, "Look, we made the playoffs last year and things were good. Why did we do this?" But it's also like, guys, the trade was done. He's there. He makes $35 million. He's going to start. You're going to have to figure this out. Depending on how long Towns is out, I still think they can probably figure this out. One thing that him being out will allow is it will allow them to figure out how to make D'Angelo Russell and Anthony Edwards and Gobert. It simplifies things to a degree. You just run pick and roll. Like we're just running 1-5 pick and roll. That's all we're doing. We're going 1-5 pick and roll, 2-5 pick and roll, and we're going to spam that with shooters, and that's what we're going to make happen. I don't necessarily think that that's like the best thing that Chris Finch wants. Chris Finch is more inventive than that. He's a better coach than that. A lot of my confidence does come from Finch. I believe that Finch is a good enough coach to figure this out. I think this is a big challenge, and I think that this will allow an opportunity to simplify things. The question is just going to be how long is Towns going to be out, and how bad will it get in that duration? Sometimes teams go on runs when they're down guys. I've seen that happen. I'm not going to bury them just because I know how random the NBA regular season is. You walk into a game and you're like, ah, Towns is out. We got this. The Wolves are bad. Oh, nope. They played harder than us. But they're going to have to find that spirit. That's the biggest thing that's missing for the Wolves this season is they got very little spirit. And they're going to have to find that. Like it's going to have to be like rally around the circle of the wagons time for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Is there any guarantee, though, to your point about the pick and roll that Edwards and Russell will be willing passers? Like it makes a lot of sense, Russell, right? Break will. It down.
I think Russell's a really good playmaker and he's really good, well fitted for the pick and roll without the other big on the floor. I actually think this makes life a lot easier for D'Angelo. It makes your defense worse, but because you're reliant on D'Angelo Russell heavy minutes, but I do think Russell can make it work. Edwards is the one I don't know about. Like he needs to, but I don't know if he's willing to.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't, you know, there have been, again, to your point, the fit questions. I wonder, you know, you generally a trade like this gets run by their key players. Was there no buy-in from the rest of that group? Or was it just a deal that kind of manifested and they said, we have to pull the trigger on this. Utah's blowing things up. We want to be getting in on that so that we can't take a playoff level team and become a legitimate title contender, at least in their view. And now it's kind of backfired to a certain degree because if you're talking about disgruntled players in the locker room, not happy with the significance of that trade, not happy with the reasons why and wanting to make those kind of sweeping changes, I don't know. And now you lose arguably your best player in Karl Anthony Towns and you're not quite sure what happens next. I don't know. It's a tough road ahead for this Minnesota group. I'm not sure how it pans out.
One more note before we go to break. Just this is a quick news note. The Dallas Mavericks released Facu Campazzo on Monday, making room for them to sign, according to Mark Stein, Hall of Famer Mark Stein, that they're going to sign Kemba Walker. This is what desperation smells like, David. This is look. I love Kemba, and Kemba was great in Charlotte, and it sucks that injuries robbed him of what could have been a pretty good final stage of his career. But he's been unplayable in every stop that he's had since there. There's a reason that the Pistons took on the contract and then moved him off. this is an they are so desperate for a secondary ball handler that they brought in Kemba Walker. They are at the bottom of the barrel. This is a bad sign for me for Dallas, because it shows that not only are they struggling and everyone can see it, but it shows that the team and the front office is concerned enough about it to start trying desperate measures. And you don't want to be getting into that situation before we even get to December.
Yeah, I don't think this is a situation that we've seen from other older players where they may be blackballed or things of that sort. There's no off the court concerns about Kemba. Great.
Everyone loves him. Guy.
Everybody loves him. Like, coaches, locker room, everything. Like, he is a generally beloved player in the NBA, and yet there's a reason why he's been traded. His stint in Detroit, his stint in New York, where he only played 40 something games. Like, it's just, he's not the player he was, and it's unfortunate. And when you start to look to that player as your solution, that's a bad sign, because he's not going to be able to provide. I would love nothing more than to see a resurgence of Kemba Walker, be able to be the half of what he was in Charlotte, because he was really damn good for a couple seasons there, a four-time All-Star. And yet, I can't believe that that's going to happen. And again, if you're looking, to your point, if you're, in a bad place, right, you're not winning a lot of games, you generally try to find something internally. Maybe we'll get a player back from injury. Maybe somebody will bounce back. Maybe we'll figure out something or try a different system. But you don't waive a bad player in order to acquire another older bad player and hope that that's going to be the spark that translates to something. Like, it's not working in Dallas. And I mean, I don't think it's just the loss of Jalen Brunson, but I certainly think that's a big part of it. And they just don't have the roster. I don't know if Jason Kidd's necessarily lost the locker room at this point. I don't know that he ever really had it, but either way, he's the head coach there, and it hasn't worked out. And I just don't know that they're going to find any kind of spark. I mean, look, Luka is too good. I think eventually they'll continue winning some games just enough. Maybe they'll be a play-in level team, but that's not where this team expected it to be. They wanted to be a deep seed and have a deep run in the playoffs. That doesn't seem likely, and Kemba Walker is not what's going to provide that solution either.
We're going to take one more break, and when we come back, I've got a question to ask David, and that is, why can no one get a stop? We'll talk about that after the break. But first, David is going to tell you about LinkedIn Jobs.
Oh, today's episode is brought to you by LinkedIn. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you've got access to the best qualified candidates available, and that's why you've got to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. I've had to do the hiring for my companies in the past, and believe me, LinkedIn was so efficient, so great. Puts the right people in front of you so you don't have to spend a lot of time making those kinds of decisions. And at the same time, again, finding the right personnel that you're looking for, it's so easy. You just add your job and then the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that your company is hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience, so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA. That's LinkedIn.com/LockedOnNBA to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. We'll be right back on Locked On NBA.
On NBA, thanks for joining us and making this part of your day and your first listen each and every day. Make sure to check out Locked On Sports Today, the biggest stories in sports, brought to you by the best and the brightest across the Locked On Sports Network. Back here with David Ramil, final segment here for your Tuesday listening. Exciting night in the association. The basketball has been good, David. The basketball has been good. I want to stress this. I'm not unhappy with the product. I think it's been really good. But as we look across the association, and we talked in the first segment about Kevin Durant going off for 45, and we've got Kristaps Porzingis going for 41, Devin Booker goes for 44, Lauri Markkanen goes for 32, Nikola Jokic goes for 32, The Nuggets put up 129. The Suns put up 122. But those were not even remarkable on a night where the Boston Celtics put up 140. They didn't even try hard and were missing two starters. The Wizards put up 140 freaking two. Scoring is out of control in the association right now. The Boston Celtics going into Monday night, going in to Monday night before they dropped 142 points on the poor Charlotte Hornets. The Celtics had the best offensive rating since possessions were able to be tracked. Per 100 possessions, they have the best. 120 points per 100 possessions at Basketball Reference. That is the best in what is able to be recorded since we have the tracked actual stats by hand to put together possessions. The Boston Celtics are number one. Okay. All right. Well, the Celtics are having a great season and it's early. Sure. But here's the problem. If you look at scoring the rest of that list of the top 10 teams of all time in offensive rating, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8 are all from 2021. Number 9 is from this year. It's the Phoenix Suns. Number 10 is last year's Utah Jazz. And the top 20, the only team before 2019 and 2017, pardon me, to crack the top 20 in offensive rating was the 1987 Los Angeles Lakers. Hmm. And look, a lot of this has to do with the expansion of the three-point line and analytics. They do play a role here, okay? In that teams have figured out how to be more efficient in how they approach the game. Hey, you're going to make that long two-pointer about the same as that three, so go ahead and just take a step back there, or let's go ahead and get all the way to the rim and these types of things. I asked Michael Malone, coach of the Nuggets, on Monday before the game. I asked him, I said, are the defensive principles the same as they were, the fundamentals the same as they were 15 years ago? And he cut me off, and he's like, no, not at all. Nothing's the same. And he talked about a lot about the officiating. He's like, you just can't guard the way you used to. And what he means by that is it's not just as like grabbing, right? Fouling. But there's a level of defense where you can be physical and bump without necessarily grabbing or slapping or these type of things, and that's not allowed. Malone commented about the fact that, and like, look, you could say like, looks, Malone's defenses haven't been good in Denver. Fair point. Been around the league a long time though. Comes from a tree of coaches that always valued defense. And he talked about how the league has continuously made adjustments to help boost the offensive performance because it was good for the marketability of the game. And I wonder, David, as I finish this long soliloquy, if we've reached a point where we have just simply gone too far. I am not saying the basketball isn't good. I think it is. But the best basketball I've seen in the last 2 years was the start of last season when they were allowing things to be called a lot looser, when teams were able to challenge at their opponents on the edge a little bit more. It should be a contest. Offense and defense should be tough in the NBA. This is the greatest league in the world. The superstars are the most talented players maybe that we've ever seen, depending on your perspective. In my opinion, the game would be best served by allowing defenses the chances to challenge those players and make them rise to the occasion of being the incredible players that they are, rather than the current game, which has just seen, in I think, a little bit too much offensive inflation.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's, you know, like most things in life, the sweet spot is right in between. Like, you want to be able to see the prolific nature of offense and the three-point shots never going away for anybody who's, you know, curmudgeonly and saying, you know what, bring back the mid-range game and things of that sort. Those days are gone. The three-point shot is here to stay, and it should be. It expands things. It makes things more dynamic, flowing differently than they ever have before. And it's beautiful basketball when it all works. We've seen great teams be able to swing the ball around and make these dynamic possessions just pop off the court and then culminate with a fantastic 25-foot shot, and that's fine. That's great basketball. Everybody loves seeing that, I think. You talk to old players, and I think there are more some open-minded ones that go, no, I love the three-point shot. I love the way it's changed the game, and I don't begrudge that any. At the same time, I think, you know, you still want to be able to allow defenders to play defense because those do make for more interesting contests when they can be just a little bit more physical. No one's looking for 85 to 82 playoff battles between the Heat and Knicks from the 1990s. Like, that's That's ugly basketball, even though I happened to enjoy it at the time. Having said that, I think somewhere in between, again, you want to be able to have a little bit more of a defensive presence. You want to be able to guard them a little bit, not necessarily result in free throws constantly. I think that slows the game down too. Like, it makes the game uglier, right? If you have to stop every 45 seconds because there's a ticky-tack foul or something like that. So if you just don't call as many fouls, allow a little bit more offense, allow a little bit more defense, you're going to get it somewhere in between. I think we see that had to culminate more in the playoffs too, where again, the whistle isn't blown as frequently. Your superstars will always get their calls. They've always gotten their calls from the 70s, 80s, 90s, and beyond that. It's not going to go away either, but you want to be able to, you know, again, allow players to defend to a higher level than they're capable of now during the regular season, while still incorporating the beautiful aspects of today's offenses that are driven by analytics. And that's not a bad thing. This idea that analytics, and it's espoused by the TNT broadcasting crew, you know, that's this catch-all phrase of all science and numbers, like it's some kind of mystic property bullshit, pardon my French, that drives the NBA. That's not it. It's just all about figuring out, oh, you know what, this works better than that. Let's do the other thing that works better rather than relying on the thing that doesn't. So yeah. I think it makes the game better. It has made the game better to a large degree. I think the changes on the offense aren't the problem. It's the changes to the defense, the officiating that you point to, that Malone spoke about. So I think that's generally it.
You know, the best defense in the league this season has a 106 defensive rating, which is, that's the best in the league this season. And it was roughly the best in the league last season and the year before. 2016, it was 98 by the Spurs. And in 2010, it was a little bit higher. It was 101. Like, those numbers, I think, were pretty much in line. Like, that felt like a little bit better balance. And it was, you still had really dynamic offenses. You still had incredible, like, 2016, we had a pretty good offense in the Golden State Warriors. Like, they were pretty good. But now we have this kind of inflation going where it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And on one hand, I just kind of feel like the players have kind of accepted, well, look, I'm not going to be able to defend him anyway, so I'm not even going to give that much effort on it. Right. And that's a bummer. Like, the games are better when they're tightly contested. The games are better when they're a struggle. Basketball should always be a little bit of a give and pull. It should be a game of runs, but it should also be a game of every possession being a little bit of a battle rather than a battle of, okay, who can break through a pretty lenient defense to get into the rim and then kick for an open three-pointer. And some of this, look, is about strategic stuff too. You can do it better. I asked Malone, I was like, what do the good teams do? I was like, what makes an elite defense in 2022? And he said it's the teams that are able to take away the rim and the three because of those analytic advantages that you talked about. You mentioned the Bucks, and one of the things that the Bucks did was they stopped over helping, and that to me is like a lot of it. I also like to see the NBA just, I think more teams need to really stress the ability of how whatever janky defense they think they need to do, they need to start employing those things. We need to get outside the box. Players are reluctant to try things, but I would really like to see them try a few more things because, while, look, again, the basketball, like, the offenses are awesome. I'm not complaining about the quality of play, but I think that the overall quality of the game could still be improved if we just give the defenses a little bit of help.
Well said.
All right, let's wrap it up for Locked On NBA. Thanks for joining us. Make sure to tune in tomorrow. You got Jake Madison, John Corrales. Those guys are awesome. You can check out Nick and Pat the Designer on Thursday. And on Friday, you got Wes Goldberg, David's co-host over at Locked On Heat, and my co-host over at Locked On Nuggets, Adam Mares, catching you up and getting you set for the weekend. Hope you guys have a great week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you guys again next time on Locked On NBA.